Ladies and gentlemen, this is Das Hobby, Germany's number one trading card show. And here are your hosts with the perfect podcast faces, Marcus and Dennis.
Liebe Leute, für diese Folge gehen wir völlig neue Wege. Wir nehmen das Intro nach dem Gespräch auf, Markus. Für uns beide überraschend gekommen, oder?
Ja, ich bin auch immer noch ganz aufgeregt, weil es war ein sehr schönes Gespräch, aber sehr ungewöhnlich, aber auch ein ungewöhnlicher Gast. Also.
Ja, wir hatten die Ehre, gerade ungefähr 25 Minuten mit Ned Turner zu quatschen. Kurz die Geschichte, wie der bei uns im Podcast gelandet ist, auch als kleine Motivation. Kinder, manchmal muss man einfach nur mal fragen. Denn als wir ein Jahr geworden sind, am 31. August, dachte ich, ohne Alkoholeinfluss tatsächlich, den schreibst du mal an, vielleicht kommt er ja auch mal als Gast. Und dann war die kurze und knappe Antwort, sure. Und dann war ich kurz ein bisschen irritiert und habe gedacht, Moment mal, wer schreibt denn da? Und und dann hat er die E-Mail-Adresse rausgegeben, haben wir einen Termin ausgemacht und dann hat er sofort quasi zugesagt. Ne?
Einen 30-Minuten-Slot haben wir bekommen und den haben wir bestmöglichst genutzt mit sehr spannenden Themen, wo man einmal, glaube ich, was über ihn so ein bisschen erfährt, ne? Aber auch natürlich über die Company, die er da hat.
Genau, wir haben ihn jetzt nicht gefragt, wie schwer er ist, geldtechnisch. Es deutete sich hier und da an. Aber super netter Kerl. Ich habe wirklich ein gutes Gefühl bei dem. Der ist, glaube ich, richtig fürs Hobby. Und war ein super Gespräch, finde ich wirklich. Hat Spaß gemacht. Und offen, ne? Und auf einen Montagmorgen so mit so jemandem eine halbe Stunde abzuringen, das musst du erstmal machen.
Ja, Montagmorgen in New York in seinem Office, das war schon spannend. Da hat auch noch einen Ausblick gegeben, also ist echt ein cooles Gespräch. Ich bin gespannt, was die Zuhörer sagen.
Genau, also dann jetzt viel Spaß. Es geht quasi jetzt dann gleich auf Englisch weiter. Viel Spaß beim Interview mit Ned Turner. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest today. The one, the only, the man needs no introduction. It's Marcus, my co-host, and another special human being who did a lot for the hobby recently, and I think I hopefully to hear it from him since he was a little boy, Ned Turner, from all the way from the US. Hello, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hello. So thank you for taking the time. And our first question usually to our guests is, so how did you get into the hobby as a collector? Let's keep the business aside. What got you into this mess?
Yeah, my dad was a big baseball fan. So I started with baseball cards. He brought me home. He often traveled for work. He was in oil and gas industry, and he'd leave and come, you know, for weeks or, you know, sometimes longer and come home. And usually he came home with like a gift or, you know, something from where he was, you know, either the country or wherever. But one time he came back, yeah, with a Hank Aaron, two Hank Aaron baseball cards, and then a Nolan Ryan card, I think was on a separate trip, which was a 1975 Topps Hank Aaron, the last card in the set. It was really beat up. He bought it at a card shop somewhere where he had traveled. And so that would have been like second grade, maybe first grade. I lived a different place every year actually growing up. Okay. And so I remember the place I was. So I'm like trying to remember how old I was. I started collecting. This is now like 1991, 92. Started collecting Atlanta Braves cards. Started getting into Griffey. I couldn't really, you know, afford Griffey as a 6-year-old, but started getting a bunch of the like 90s, you know, basketball cards starting in 96 when Kobe was a rookie, and it kind of just evolved from there.
Nice. Very good.
There was a start, and then if I read right, I just read, first of all, my English is not my perfect, but I try my best in this podcast, like always. I just read in the magazine, I think Forbes it was, that in the pandemic time, there was also a time when you come back to the hobby. Was it a break between there or?
Oh, no. The only break I really took was probably senior year of high school, which would have been like 2002, right before LeBron was a rookie. So like 01, 02, it would have been. I got really back into it in 03. And then, you know, was really only collecting LeBron James from like 03 to 2010. And then got really into Jordan and Kobe and 90s again, because I had some money at that time where I could buy the things that I couldn't afford when I was, you know, in the 90s. And I did that for about a 10 years. I'm still doing that, I guess. But during COVID, what happened is I went home, like a lot of people did. You know, I stopped going into the office, and my wife and I and kids moved in with my parents in North Carolina. And my mom had all of my childhood cards that I hadn't seen in, you know, probably 20 years. And I started going through them all, and I picked out, you know, 100 that I got graded like everyone else did, which is what crushed PSA for that period of time. But, you know, I got rekindled basically with, you know, the shitty, pardon my language, you know, junk wax, you know, commons base cards that are in like, you know, PSA 4, 5, 6 condition. But it was really fun. You know, I had sets, I had them all organized by player back then. I had, you know, designs of all these cards that I had made when I was a kid, and it was just cool. But no, I haven't taken a break since like 2003.
Okay. So Atlanta Braves, was it as a kid? So what is Nat Turner collecting right now? Like what's your PC?
Yeah. I'm very much into 90s basketball still. I can't seem to shake that addiction. Vintage baseball. I'm not like hardcore about it. I collect, you know, 3 or 4 sets though, like 1975 tops, not so surprisingly, 59 tops. And then I collect certain players like Hank Aaron, Nolan Ryan, Mickey Mantle. I collect a lot of wax. So I do a lot of unopened boxes and packs, 90s basketball, of course, 2003 basketball, vintage baseball packs. Mostly can't really find the boxes. Mm-hmm. And then I'm actually really into some low end sets in the 2000s, like 2002 finest gold refractors. I mean, you can buy commons for $3, you know, but you know, the LeBron James is, you know, $50,000 or more. So you have to kind of, you know, bite the bullet on the big cards. 2008 Topps Chrome gold refractors, again, commons are $10 or less. The big stars are obviously expensive, but, doing a lot of the throwback sets. So I'm doing like 61, the classic 61 set from 98 Fleer Tradition. I'm doing the 52 style from 05, the gold refractors, which are super cool. Okay. They, you know, the basketball cards, they look like 1952 Topps baseball. Yeah, I'm doing stuff like that. I'm now collecting photographs, original photographs. I'm doing some tickets now, mainly okay. Masters related, the golf tournament. I think what else? Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, tickets. I've heard that several times now, that this is really, really a thing now, right?
Yeah, it's growing. It's the fastest growing category at PSA, actually. Trying to think if that's still true. It was true for the last year. I think it is still true. But yeah, I mean, it's really fun. I mean, I'm not into hardcore tickets yet. I'm mainly collecting for events that I like the Masters tournament. Mm-hmm. And I've been buying special things, like, you know, I collect like Pearl Jam tickets and things like that. You know, I'm not like into the sports tickets yet on the basketball or baseball side. I've tried to bid on and unfortunately didn't win some of the like Mickey Mantle debut or Jackie Robinson debut tickets. Okay. Those are Jordan, like those have just price wise. Are very expensive. But yeah, it's exciting. We get a lot of tickets submitted to PSA. And soccer too, by the way, like for some reason, soccer tickets in particular are, I don't know, more popular, it seems. So
the big tournaments for soccer or also like we have it over here, Bundesliga or Champions League, or?
It's a lot of like player debut tickets or like major tournaments. Like what's a good example? Like a lot of the World Cup stuff where, you know, old, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, where certain players had big performances or certain teams won, certain countries won, you'll see those tickets.
Germany, maybe.
I haven't looked, I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting development. So this connection between an event and something that you hold in your hand, like, I think that is really, like, also for me personally, when I can remember the game or the performance of the athlete on the card, that is the special, special thing for me personally.
Especially, it's also not easy to get in. Also, when I work for a soccer club here in Germany, and to get in the stadium, it's not easy, at least in Germany, to, because it's always sold out. And then if you participate in a game when you, where there's a first game of a special rookie, I think that's a connection where you have also.
So the company name PSA, I've heard it here or there before. What got you into that? Can you just give us a short version of how you got into the business there?
Well, I'm a big collector. I have been for a long time, as I said, and I've been really since like 2010 focused on actually really in 03, starting with LeBron James cards, but back then it was more BGS, where I was really focused on the grade of the card. You know, so I collected every LeBron James card and BGS 9.5. In 2010, I started doing BGS 9.5s or PSA 10s of every Jordan card that I could find, and Kobe actually. And then I started doing certain vintage baseball sets all in PSA 10 or 9, depending on the set. And that really started to kind of get me excited about uniformity in my collection, grading. You know, I started submitting things 15 years ago. You know, raw cards, four sets, like 75 Topps Mini, for example. And then a lot of these 90 sets, like PMGs and the base cards from like Metal Universe. And so it really became very important to me as a collector. And I started getting really excited personally about what technology could do to the grading process, but also to the surrounding service. So things like the set registry or, you know, vaulting or marketplace, making things just more accurate, more consistent, and then more accessible. And I wasn't, you know, I called the company prior to, you know, making an attempt to buy the company to see if, you know, it could help. Or, and it's hard to do that if you don't actually work there, to be fair to them. And got really excited, more excited over time. You know, COVID hit, as I mentioned, I went home, I started playing with my childhood cards, and frankly, kind of realized like this is what I wanted to do next as a business, you know, cards. For 20 years, you know, I had had business stuff, but I never really thought of trading cards as a business that I would participate in. Obviously, it was a business, but I kind of wanted it to be separate. And I made that decision. It was like right during COVID, it was the summer of 2020, where I was just like, you know what, like this is what I'm most excited and passionate about. You know, why not? And to me, it was really, it was PSA or nothing. You know, I love, you know, that everyone's doing other things in the hobby, but, you know, for me, like that was the company that, you know, meant the most, you know, to me as a collector, other than the card manufacturers, which, you know, wasn't a game I was, you know, able to play, with the licenses. So, yeah. And so, I mean, I called Joe Orlando and, you know, we figured it out over the, it took a while. Yeah, it took like almost a year, but I'm glad it worked out.
So. And it is, you said, of course, the most people knowing the grading part. You said collection management. I think Vault is quite new in the collectors universe. Is there something else? What's the part of?
Yeah, the set registry. So this, it's super important to me. This is basically where people register the cards that they own that are PSA graded, and then by certain number, the certificate number, and then you can start sets and compete on sets. And, you know, I have probably over 100 sets that I'm actively pursuing that I manage on the set registry on psacard.com. Yeah, so that's a big one for us, a very popular tool. You know, hundreds of thousands of sets are registered, and, you know, people are filling and looking for things. And the biggest thing we get asked for on the set register side is help me find the cards that I need to complete certain sets. And so they want our help matchmaking towards those missing cards. And so that's kind of where our marketplace opportunity lies, which is starting with the set registry and starting with all the data we know about our PSA users. They tell us they need these certain cards, or they own these certain cards with like other Michael Jordan cards, for example. You know, we're in a really powerful position to help them. And so that's kind of where the Vault came in. And now we're, what we're doing with Golden and other partners on the marketplace side to matchmake and allow people to list their cards for sale kind of in like a PSA marketplace, if you will, connecting everybody together. So that's the vision. It's all about the collector to us. I mean, this isn't, you know, if we'll do things, you know, as long as the collector wants it, that's all we care about. And we're obsessed about collectors. And so, you know, that's kind of where our features and priorities lie. And yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming.
I think also from just to give you, maybe you know it already, but in Germany, I think the most people are also prefer cards sending to PSA. Of course, we have also some local ones. When you want to have your card safe in a slab, then it's a good alternative for some people. But if you want to make it as an invest, especially, or you like the cases, then you have submission companies and send it to US.
How is your connection to Europe and Germany? Do you know what's going on over here? Do you know people from over here?
I deal with a bunch of collectors, you know, personally. You know, a lot of, believe it or not, a lot of the 90s collectors are in Europe for basketball. We mentioned before Kiki as an example. You know, there's a doctor, Dr. Christian, who I work with a lot. I think he's in Austria, perhaps. You know, we've done 20 deals together. There's a pretty big PMG collector in France that will remain nameless. And, you know, there's quite a few. So more on the personal side, but on the professional side with PSA, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, I would say other than Asia, it's the biggest market we have to service better. You know, we're pretty far along in the United States, admittedly. Like, you know, we've probably put more emphasis there, which is makes sense. But you know, we've got a big office coming in Tokyo, and then we're actually now operating out of Shanghai in China for PSA. Europe's next, so you know, we have ambitions for the UK. We actually do have a number of conversations going in Germany and France. We have an office in France actually for our coin division in Paris. So, you know, honestly, we'd love your help. I mean, if there's things we can do, I think our preference would be a combination of having a local office that would ship back and forth to the United States in a very kind of white glove kind of way. Mm-hmm. And have multiple dealers/group submitters in those countries that can, you know, be closer to the customer, because not everybody wants to send directly to PSA. They want to walk in and hand a bag of cards mm-hmm. to a dealer and let them take care of everything else. And so that's what we do in the US. You know, you can bring cards directly to us and ship them, or you can work with dealers. It works, you know, it's about 50-50 actually volume wise. And so that's our plan. So if, you know, if anyone's listening and wants to be a dealer in Europe for us, or help us open an office and be an employee here, you know, definitely reach out.
Okay. Okay, I got your email address, so I'm going to send in my application after this interview.
Hey, look, I mean, we're looking at office space in London. I mean, we've got a lot going on. So
get this London thing. They have Brexit. I know. You cannot ship in and out. It's horrible.
we would do Germany if, you know, I mean, maybe offline we can talk about the right cities and, you know, kind of where to do it. So
yeah. So you spoke about Europe. So, but is there a mission? Is there a goal for you personally? What you want to accomplish with the company in the short future? Let's say it like that.
Well, look, I think Europe can be 10-20% of PSA's business as far as submission volume. Right now, it's less than 3%. So you know, the cards are there. I mean, Germany, France, all these countries. I mean, definitely with soccer cards, but tons of basketball card collectors and so on, TCG, Pokemon. So, you know, we see it on the, you know, trickling in, and we see the overwhelming number of messages we get from people wanting to submit. They just don't like shipping across, you know, the Atlantic Ocean, or there aren't dealers in their markets. So like I said, I mean, I don't know if it's short term, maybe it's more midterm, long term, but you know, 10%+, maybe even up to 20% of our volume ultimately probably can and should come from Europe, European collectors. I'd say the same about Asia. You know, right now it's probably closer to 6%, 5 or 6% is coming from Japan and China, which is just really small. I mean, you look there, it's more basketball, baseball collectors and the TCG, but you know, we're underserving those customers for sure. So yeah, that's our plan. And frankly, content too. You know, we have our magazine, but we need to do a better job of, you know, having that available in different languages and both digitally and physically.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I mean, with countries like France and Germany, that's always a challenge because we have our own language pretty much. And the country is proud of that language. So I was in the music business for many years, and it's always a little hard to describe to the US people that, hey, we have rap stars over here. They are much bigger than Jay-Z over here. They are selling more records. They are selling more tickets. And like, of course, outside of Germany, nobody bothers. But in this country, they are really, really relevant. And I think that's the same with content. There's a lot of local content.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, honestly, our plan would be to find someone to be like head of PSA Germany or PSA France, who can be like a general manager for that country for us. Yeah. So that's, you know, we have our eyes and ears open for that. So
after this podcast, their applications were sent it out.
Yeah, that's fine. That's one reason I'm here.
Yeah, I saw on your website too, like that you have jobs to give out, a lot of jobs.
Yes. Yeah,
so you're hiring.
Sure. Yeah, very, very. Yeah, we have a lot of open spots.
To look a bit in the future, we are a bit, hopefully, a bit after the pandemic. In the pandemic, there was this hype about in the hobby, I would say. It's go a bit down from my perspective, at least. What do you think when we sit in, I don't know, 3-4 years again in a podcast, where the hobby will be? So where will be the development?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a healthy thing. I think things got unhealthy there for a while, you know, with speculation. And you know, you just look at the prices of some of these, you know, rookie quarterbacks compared to the Hall of Famers and, you know, and then the number of rookie cards that you see each of these guys have. It just things are definitely, they got overheated. And I think the same could be said for the public equity markets and crypto and NFTs and everything, right? So I think it's a healthy thing. You know, it restores a bit of rationale, you know, to the market, pragmatism. So, you know, 3 years from now, I mean, look, I hope, you know, we're going to see Fanatics make a lot of moves on the manufacturing side. I hope, I believe they will do the right thing and, you know, grow that in a healthy way as opposed to in a kind of overproduced, you know, cheapened way, which I feel like happened during COVID. Mm. You know, and I would love to see that be corrected. I think the same can be said for the grading companies, including us. You know, we need to have pricing be at a certain level and turnaround times be at a certain level that, you know, meet the customer's expectations, but also, frankly, protect against, you know, that what some say is like the junk slab era of, you know, everyone grading every card, which I don't think is the right thing either. Mm-hmm. You know, it should be focused on true collectors who want to complete sets and for cards that deserve where condition matters to be graded. And so I don't know, 3 years from now, that's kind of what I'm hoping. I think also too, just growing the hobby base. I mean, I think a lot of people got into the hobby over COVID and maybe not all of them are going to stick around because for them, it was a more speculative, temporary, like distraction perhaps. But I think a lot will stick around. And I think it's on us as an industry for the next 3 years to keep them engaged, but then also bring in the next generation, which is always on the hobby to do. But I think it's particularly important right now with, you know, people seeing card prices, you know, be lower than they were, which again, I think like the card prices never should have been as high as they were. It's easy to say that in hindsight, but, you know, it's obviously true. So, you know, it's on us to kind of bring that next generation in this kind of, you know, downturn, if you will.
I really have to say, and I watched and listened to some other of your interviews. It's such refreshing to listen to you because it just feels like real and authentic, and that it's really like close to your heart that these things happen. Of course, you're a businessman. I get that, but it really feels that the right person is in the right position over there. So
I appreciate that. That's
awesome. As we in Germany say, "Hut ab." It's like heads off. So really, I have to say that it's I think that it's very, very important that in the key positions, you have the right people. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised by the love that I'm spreading.
Me too. Here. I'm speechless.
What is happening?
I wish there were more, more true collectors in the hobby too. And then in the business side, you know, I think a lot of, we're trying, I mean, we hire as many of them as we can, but yeah, that's my hope for Fanatics. Like if they can, you know, embrace, go back to the true collector side. Cause you know, another thing that's happened in the last few years is breaking, which I think is a good thing. It's just become frankly, very gambling-esque, like FanDuel, DraftKings and, you know, people forget the only reason you're willing to buy a box for a certain amount of money is that the cards you pull are worth a certain amount of money. So the secondary value of those cards needs to be, you know, high enough to support the expected value of what you're willing to pay for a box or a pack and a break. And so if it's all about gambling and, you know, the cards need to be ever more valuable on downstream. And, you know, the only way you do that is if there's more collectors who want those cards. And so, you know, embracing the collector is what the manufacturers need to really return to their roots of. Like I said, it got very speculative there for a few years. And same for grading. I mean, like I said, we're still paying the price for that, you know, with the number of cards we came and got in our backlog. So we have a lot of work to do ourselves.
Great. Wonderful. Yeah, I have also a good, especially in Germany, the people have also these part of course, how I can get the boxes or the cards, because in Germany, in Europe, it's not easy to get the boxes also.
Right, so, right.
Yeah, the whole structure, like with Panini America and Panini, over, I mean, it is a European company, but the access to NBA cards.
No, I know, it's horrible. Subsidiary, yeah. Which actually breaking, that's a good use case for it. I mean, it makes it more accessible.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy a break on whatnot and spot in a break, and then it doesn't matter what country you're in, I would think. But yeah. You know,
wonderful.
It's not the same though as having it in your hands.
That is true. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for this talk.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Very, very thankful.
Thank you very much.
And keep on doing what you're doing. I think it's really, really important and it feels right. And people like PSA over here. I'm gonna tell.
No, good. Yeah,
really.
We hope to be there, bigger and better, hopefully in the future. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Have a great day over there.
Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks, Marcus. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.